The following podcast is brought to you on behalf of the Saracen Supporters Association and is not an official product of Saracens Limited. The content provided voluntarily by our guests and contributors are of their own opinion, which may change over time and should not be taken as fact, particularly as the podcast hosts are regularly talking drivel anyway. If you've got some drivel of your own you'd like to share, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at fezcast_SSA. You can search Facebook for the Fezcast, or you can email fezcast.ssa@outlook.com.
You're listening to the Fezcast.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Fezcast. In the hot seat, Big Bill Werbenick and the Rocket. It's an in joke between me and Matt. Hey, Matt, how you doing? All right.
I'm not too bad, man. Fortunately, I'm stone cold sober, unlike Big Bill.
Well, indeed, and we both were on Sunday at the Stonex, where we met up, where we went to see London Irish play as well. Unlike some members of the Fezcast team.
Someone's got to represent, haven't they?
Well, absolutely. And I think we didn't see John. And I assume he was probably crying into his beer after the Spurs Newcastle result as well. Whereas for me, West Ham won. So it was great. And actually, I had a quick chat with Jackson Ray on the way in as they came in and said, you know, two wins today, Hammers and Surrey's, and it worked. So there you go.
That's fair enough. Well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Well, what we got coming up on this show, Matt? Well, you and me are going to have a chat about the game on Sunday and a couple of things that came out the back of that, and obviously look forward to a home semi-final against Saints. We've then got a chat, myself and Joe did, with Corinne Grant on Saracens Women and Scotland, so we can talk about all sorts of things there, and including the environment and NFL and all sorts of interest stuff. It's a fabulous conversation right there. And then we've got a couple of things to get off our chest at the end of the show, haven't we, Matt?
Well, we normally have something to get off our chest, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you speak like a pirate, you possibly don't want to listen to this one. But anyway, or tweet like a pirate, shall we say. But anyway, let's have a chat about Sunday. And a pretty great result, actually. I mean, the first thing I'm going to say is, it's quite funny seeing London Irish, that the one thing they can only hang on is the big hit that Hugh Tizard took from their number eight, which was impressive. And everybody's moaning that, because they said it was own foul, but I think it was actually Alex Lavosky who asked the referee, you're going to have a look at that. Which, bearing in mind, I thought first 20 minutes, there's a few high hits went in that weren't looked at from Irish. It was a fair enough question to ask, wouldn't it, Matt?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, it was probably the tackle of the season. And it's one of those, we spent so long talking about red cards and dangerous tackles and high hits. You know, that was a split second away, or a slight lack of technique away from being a red card itself. But it turns out that it was a brilliant tackle, perfect tackle, and earned them a penalty, and absolutely fair enough. London Irish, you know, it's been a bogey side for us over recent seasons. So it's good, on the one hand, to sort of get that monkey off of our back a little bit, but also to stop them from being our opponents in the semi-finals as well.
Well, again, yeah, and that's the other thing that's coming out of the London Irish side of things, is the moaning that we could put out basically an A team against Saints the week before, and then put a full strength side out against them. Well, Yabu sucks, I say. At the end of the day, we earned the right to do that by being impressive throughout the season. And, you know, London Irish weren't impressive throughout the season. In fact, you know, they have to actually say from where they started from in the first few games, where they looked like they were bottom club, you know, almost given the wooden spoon straight away. And actually, they've had a pretty good second half of the season. They're a good side, and they will come again and develop again, I think, under Declan Kidney. But yeah, you know, it's the season long. You play that season so that you can actually earn the right to rest some players, which we did. And yeah, as we quite rightly say, I think we'd rather play Saints at home than London Irish at home, even though after putting 45 points on London Irish this weekend.
Oh, no, I think you're absolutely right. You know, we played well enough in the season. I'm just repeating what you say, really. We played well enough in the season to engineer what we wanted, really. There's nothing stopping you doing that, especially as a lot of our players that were rested last week really did need that rest. And a couple of players are still rested against London Irish, and I expect there'll be some rotation for the final game against Bath as well. It's what happens at the end of a season when a club has been able to get a little bit ahead. They are able to chop and change a little bit. I mean, Hugh Tizard, all right, he came off the bench early in the second half, but he was desperate for a rest and got one. Jamie George obviously still isn't around, so there's players that were well deserving of having a bit of a break. And from London Irish's point of view, yeah, one or two more wins over the course of the season, and that situation doesn't happen for them, and they wouldn't have any complaints.
Absolutely, 100% right there. I think, you know, and that's just the nature of a league season. That's how you do it, and you have squads for exactly those reasons. And the fact that Saracens can put out an A team that is competitive against Saints just shows the strength that we have and the development, and it's young players coming through, which is where I want to go next with players who stood out. And we're going to leave the one player I think that we both agreed with was the man of the match on the day until last. But first up, Theo Dan, you know, when you've got KP, who's an American international hooker, on the squad, Jamie George is rested, you'd expect KP to come in. And, you know, for whatever reason, perhaps isn't happening quite good enough for him. But Theo Dan has really stepped up. And now, you know, Charlie Morgan's writing in the Telegraph saying that, you know, Theo Dan would be on England's radar. But there's a groundswell of opinion saying that perhaps he should be included even earlier, ready for this World Cup. And when we go into part three and we chat about certain other players in certain other clubs, you know, it's not a bad show after all, is it?
No, it's a position where England are struggling is the wrong word, but there needs to be a bit of a changing of the guard. When you've had Jamie George and Luke Cowan-Dickie, who've sort of held the position for quite a while now, and no one's really stepped into the number two shirt beyond those two. An awful lot of people that have been in and around the squad, the likes of Singleton and Walker and co. And yeah, Theo Dan does look like someone that does have the potential already to do a useful job in international rugby. There's some raw elements of his game, definitely. But yeah, I don't know whether the World Cup is maybe a little bit too soon for him, but he's definitely a bit of a bolter for some people, for sure. And he was fantastic on Sunday as well.
Absolutely. I think someone described him as, you know, without wishing to put too much pressure on the lad, but, you know, seeing elements of one of the greats of Saracens' recent history in Shout Brits. He plays in a very similar style. He has all of those skills that Shout had, with perhaps a little bit more bulk and a little bit more explosiveness. But yeah, I mean, you know, and where Jamie George learned from Shout is obviously, you know, that is being passed down, which is great. You see a succession in positions. And
but someone actually said to me, I mean, it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it was quite right, that Theo Dan is the best hooker prospect to come through Saracens Academy since Jamie George, which is a bit... he is the latest Saracens product through the Academy since Jamie George. But yeah, it's they play the game in two different ways, and I don't think either of us would be shocking anyone too much when we say Jamie George is starting to past his peak is the wrong word, but I think he's hit his peak. He's got however many years left in him as the number one de facto hooker in the Saracen squad, and there's an argument that we'll probably have later on in the season who our best hooker has been this season for Saracens. It's probably a big debate, but yeah, Theo looks like he's, you know, I think we'd want to tie him down to a 15-year contract.
Well, absolutely, right, 100%. Yeah, I mean, and, well, you know, all good power to him. We'll move on to the superstars on the team. And, you know, it seems to be this year when the television cameras are at the Stone X or where Saracens won, Man of the Match award seems to get spread evenly between Ben Earl and Owen Fowler, maybe Billy Villapola. You know, they are kind of superstars who do catch the eye. And both of them, again, had super games on the weekend. Owen and two kicks that went out on the full, one which he got away with somehow, God knows how, and one which he didn't. And, you know, his kicking from the tee was back on form. But, I mean, they talked about the tackle the eight put in. I think Faz put in one equally as impressive And I can't remember whether it was on the, I can't say what I would normally call him, but on Paddy Jackson, who's a player I don't like for a number of different reasons. But yeah, whether, what was it on him or on one of the centres? He absolutely marmalised them.
Yeah, it was definitely a very good hit from Omani. Definitely he had the bit between his teeth in that game. And it was good to see that, like I say, other than the kickoff that did go out on the full and lead to a scrum, and the other one, which I think I heard the referee's whistle blow a couple of times as he was kicking it because there was a substitution being made. I think that's the reason why that was called back and potentially why Farrell was put off a little bit. We're given the benefit of the doubt on that one. Other than that, his kicking from the tee was pretty much perfect. He had one that hit the post. I think that was the only one that he missed, which he has had some off days with the boot this season. So it's pretty pleasing to see there without Owen being hot off the tee, that would have been a much closer game in the end. Which is stupid to say, of course it would be, but it's. Yeah, Owen had a very, very good game, and as did Ben Earl. A lot of turnovers in Ben Earl's game. But yeah, I it's a little bit harsh to Owen, really, but that was definitely a TV pick for man of the match, for sure.
Well, yeah, we'll mention that in a minute when I talk about something else that's got me goat slightly, and more, not so much my goat, but actually my wife's, Shaz's goat. But the player that I think we really do need to pull out here, I mean, Nick Tompkins again had another super game, and you see where everybody's talking about Andre Esthuizen as the best inside centre or this, that, you know. Nick Tompkins has had a fabulous season again. But for me, the player that made the difference was Nick Ezekwe playing on the blind side for a number of reasons. One, he sorted out London Irish's line out and put that under immense pressure, and also got our line out ticking beautifully. I think between him and Maro calling it, they did an absolutely superb job and of mixing up. And that's what Nick Ezekwe gives you if he plays at blindside, is that third genuine line out option that you can go to and use. And secondly, playing at blindside, given that we lost Theo McFarlane for half the season, and then Andy Christie stepped up and played brilliantly, and then we've lost him to injury, for Nick to come in at blindside and perform at the levels he has done has been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, where we were worried about a position being a concern, he's really stepped up and worked hard. And he's, you're right. And, you know, I think the whole back row, because Jackson Ray had another game where he rolled back the years, the runs he took the ball up into contact with were absolutely immense. But, yeah, Nick Ezekwe was just different class, I felt.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, his return from injury was pretty timely, really, wasn't it? As soon as he starts coming back and getting some minutes, everyone else gets injured. So it's been pretty good. And yeah, I agree with you. Obviously, we met up after the game and we both pretty much said simultaneously that we'd have both given man of the match to Nick Ezekwe. And we do both like to give it to someone who's maybe done some of the less highlights reel work. He did a lot of hard graft. But you're right, certainly the work that he did at the line out and the steal of London Irish's line out on their 5 metre line, which led to Aroni Maui somehow being birthed from the middle of a mould to score a try, that was absolutely outstanding. So yeah, he's been brilliant, and I think he's going to be pretty crucial over the next couple of weeks. Particularly as, I mean, I'd say I don't think Maro Itoje had a very good game on Sunday. Certainly didn't have a good first half and was a little bit quiet in the second. It does happen. Everyone has a bit of an off day, but yeah, it was a little bit worrying, I think.
Well, the thing with Maro, I think the problem that Maro has, and it's the same when you've had Owen Farrell missing kicks off the tee and everything, we hold them up perhaps to higher standards than we do other players. And if they don't reach those standards, then we quite rightly have a think and say, have they performed well? Yeah, a 75% Maro Itoje performance is still better than pretty much most of the second rows in the Premiership. So, you know, I'm not so worried about that. The important thing is that Maro was still showing himself. He had a couple of knock-ons, but he still showed himself as being there ready to take the ball up. And likewise, when he gets penalised, as he sometimes does in games, it doesn't stop him still trying to do what he does. which is great because a lot of players would perhaps go into their shell. Or if you're a London Irish second row, you just tackle somebody high and get a yellow card.
Yeah, if you need a break.
I don't know what it is about Saracens players and Irish second rows that they really do like taking us round the neck. I mean, Theo Dan, fair dues to him, was taken round the neck by Rob Simmons. Could easily have gone down, could easily have milked that one and got a bigger judgment against Rob Simmons. To his credit, stayed on his feet and tried still playing on, which probably saved it from being a red to a yellow. But yeah, I mean, they just... There's a mental block going on there somewhere.
It's very strange, isn't it? I mean, Simmons, to be fair to him, he sort of stuck his arm out and basically before he'd even hit him, he realised he'd got it completely wrong. And it does happen. And I think the right decision was, there were some people that were saying, oh, that should be a red, it's a high swinging arm and things. No, he's just stuck an arm out. He knows he's got it wrong before he's even doing it. There wasn't a huge amount of force in it particularly. And I think for the referee, just to give a yellow card straight away and get on with it was absolutely fine. But yeah, there's just something about London Irish second rows and high hits against us, isn't it? It's bizarre.
Well, absolutely. And I think it's fair to mention the referee at this precise second in time, because I thought 10 minutes in that I was going to be having a whinge about him, because I think a number of things did go against us. A lot of that, I think, was down to the fact that London Irish just come charging out of the blocks and, you know, because they had to get their four tries and a win. So, you know, they threw caution to the wind. They had nothing to lose there and it actually made it into a really good game. I think Saracen sorted out what the referee wanted fairly quickly and played to him. And the referee let that game flow beautifully, I felt, and did a really good job. Which leads me to my last point, in so much as that obviously Owen Farrell had a word with him as he came off the pitch. If you watch on the TV, you see Owen and the referee coming off, having a bit of a giggle about something. Something's been said, which then meant, obviously, Owen Farrell, been given man of the match, meant he went off and had an interview with Sarah Egan. Now, I got my wife's viewpoint of this before I actually watched the interview, but then went and watched the interview and completely agreed with what my wife's saying, because Sarah Egan gets hold of Owen Farrell, and we know Owen's not the most gregarious of guys when it comes to interviews. He doesn't particularly like talking to interviews, and you know, he plays a pretty straight bat. We've seen it before. We saw it with Sonia McLaughlin in an England situation. But the first question Sarah Egan said was, what did you say to the referee? And Owen's come back dead bad and said, that's between me and the ref sort of thing. She said, oh, no, well, come on then. What was it? No, that's, I'm not telling you. Well, it must have been bad then. No, I'm just not telling you. You know, and that's what the interview mainly was. There was nothing about the rugby at all. And then, you know, that interview finishes. They then go and get Ben Earl for an interview with Sarah Egan. First question he asked, so what did Owen say to the referee? It's shoddy. You know, I don't like seeing interviewers are going out there after a game of rugby. We're rugby fans. We want to know what was going, you know, what did Owen feel about the game? What did Saracens do good? What do they need to improve? Those are the things we want. We don't want to hear them trying to get something controversial out of it when they're completely obviously wasn't something controversial. It was just them coming off and saying, really enjoyed that, ref. Yeah, I enjoyed it too, Owen. Great game. Thank you very much. Whatever it was nothing controversial, but she wants to make something controversial of it. And quite frankly, no, it's not needed.
No, not at all. I mean, I've not actually seen the interview, to be honest, but I would imagine if I was a referee and I was refereeing Owen Farrell, after the game, I wouldn't be surprised if the ref's gone up to him and gone, you're an aggressive little Watson, aren't you? Aren't you, Owen? And the ref's trying to wind him up. So you just, and that's between the two of them.
It's a bit of banter, isn't it? You know,
yeah. That's the point that we need to make. Really, is that for all Owen's intensity on the pitch, he does actually get on quite well with a lot of officials in rugby, and it is all part of the game. It's all part of the fun. You know, that you knock seven bells out of each other on a rugby pitch, come off, shake hands, and have a beer afterwards. That extends to the officials as well. Most of the time, I'm sure there's one or two that don't get much good treatment. But yeah, I get over it, I think.
Well, again, and we'll chat about that in part three, because there's a hot topic that we need to pick up on that side of things. But yeah, I mean, yeah, just concentrate on the rugby. Okay, ask it once. If he turns around and dead bats it back to you, say, fair enough, well bowled, well played, and move on and ask a different question. Don't just try and get controversy for the sake of controversy. Anyway, Matt, I think we've done the game to death and everything like that. We've got a semi-final, obviously, home semi-final to look forward to against Saints. One thing I will say is, you know, a lot of people are sat there saying, well, we went up to Franklin's Gardens with an A team and we ran them close with 14 men and everything like that. The one thing I know Smalley won't be doing is allowing the team to be complacent. Yes, we're going to go in with a full strength side because that's what we do at this point of the season. We're not going to go in thinking, oh, well, we're going to put 50 points on Saints. We're going to go in thinking it's going to be a hard game, a tough game, a game that Saints, if they turn up and we don't, could easily win. We are favourites, quite rightly we're favourites. We deserve to be favourites, but we're going to pay them respects and we're not going to be complacent.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it's knockout rugby as well at the end of the day. Anything can happen. And we have come unstuck occasionally when it comes around to that one of those big final games. And as you say, Saints will be treating it very differently as well. They'll have a different game plan coming to our ground. They'll probably spring a few surprises. And yeah, we've got to be taking it full tilt and taking it seriously regardless. We could get another red card within the first 2 minutes of the game and be backs against the wall. You just don't know. So, you know, all we can say is we've been here before. We've been in knockout games against Saints before. It's probably a quite even split over who's actually had the better record. First things first, let's get through the game against Bath unscathed and try and put a few things together in that as well. I don't expect us to be rotating and playing all the 18-year-olds against Bath. I'd imagine they want to take a little bit of momentum into the semi-final. But yeah, it's definitely something to look forward to.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I won't be there. I assume you will be.
I can't get the day off work.
It's the day before I run Leeds Marathon. So the rest of the Vestcast guys will have to stand in for us on that one, and perhaps they might have to do the Vestcast that one after. But right, let's stop that there. We'll have a little break, and then we'll be back with me and Joe talking to Scotland and Saracens women's winger, Troy Machine, the Flying Scotswoman, apparently I'm the first person to think that nickname up. Christ knows how I'm the first person. But you'll hear that in the interview we do with Corinne Grant, which is coming up after the break.
You're listening to the Fezcast, which is proudly sponsored by the Saracen Supporters Association. And I'm Alison Davis, one of the SSA committee. For a £10 annual subscription, the SSA provides our members with monthly newsletters, virtual and in-person player events, away match ticket allocations, and we organise pre-match gatherings at away matches. We sponsor men's and women's players, and we support the Saracens Foundation Track Club on behalf of our members. On top of all that, every year we have a seasonal SSA badge, which is exclusive to members. Where else can you get that much value for a tenner? Join now at membermojo.co.uk/SSA or come and see us on match day in the Oasis at the Stonex.
This is the Fezcast. Well, joining me and Joe on the Fezcast is our special guest for this week. Fantastic player for Saracens Women. Turned into a prolific try scorer this week. And I'm going to give you the obvious nickname of the Flying Scotswoman. And I'm not sure whether you've heard that or not, but I mean, my father-in-law's a big Trains fan and he's been to see the Flying Scotswoman recently. So, Corinne Grant, you are our Flying Scotswoman on the wing. You've been scoring tries for fun this year, not only for Saracens, but also for Scotland as well. Welcome to the Fezcast and thank you for joining us.
No, thank you very much for having me on. And that's a new nickname. I haven't heard that one yet, so...
Well, there you go. Look, I've invented one there. Well, absolutely. I expect the guys at Saracens to be using that as soon as they possibly can in the next commentary and everything. But yeah, I mean, you've had a great season so far. As I alluded to, you've been scoring tries for Saracens Women like they're going out of fashion. And you got your try for Scotland in the game against Wales. How's it been this year? How are you enjoying life on the rugby field?
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. Huge pleasure this season so far. Yeah, it's probably the first season at Saracens that I've it's really clicked for me. Been getting loads of game time, and I mean, sometimes it's a fairly easy job that I've got just finishing off in the corner. You know, we've got such a great team inside of me that sometimes I've really got the easy job, but it's always lots of fun to get on the score sheet. And this is the first season that I've scored any tries for Saracens, so all of them are always fun.
Well, what do you put that down to then this season? I mean, what has actually changed for you in your game? Is it preparation? Is it higher intensity training? What's changed to make that happen?
I think it's probably a combination of things. This is the first season that I've had the time to really dedicate a large chunk of my time to rugby. Obviously, we've got the Scotland contracts in for the first time this season. Prior to that, I was either a full-time student or full-time working, which becomes difficult to juggle training, recovery, analysis, all the good things you need to kind of put the full package together. So I think that probably contributed. I think I just come off the back of a World Cup where obviously went to New Zealand but didn't get to play in any of the World Cup matches. And I think that probably stoked the fire a bit, I think I'd say. And then just credit to the Saracens management as well, really pushing me and then getting rewarded with that game time. And you know, you only get better at rugby by playing rugby. So that's been a huge part of it.
And I think you definitely you've been rewarded with Scotland as well, with your performances with Saracens there. You've had a number of starts. Your first try for Scotland, as Jez has mentioned there. And those contracts clearly have really helped the Scottish girls as well. I noticed that Louise, who we've had on the show as well, scored her first try for Scotland this weekend, and we'll cover that game in a second, because I don't think there was probably anybody in the UK that wasn't cheering for Scotland. I was certainly bellowing at the TV this weekend. How is it in terms of your Scottish prep? You've obviously got another crunch game this weekend back at Damhill Stadium. Lots on social media about the crowd noise and how brilliant you found that. What is it? Is that comparable to how you find things at Saracens? Is there much difference between how you find life with the Scottish team and the Saracens team?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think there definitely are some really good comparisons. I think Damhill Stadium in Edinburgh and Stonex are both really good stadiums for our supporters, and you really get the noise from both of those sets, and that really kind of, for both teams, that really G's us up. At the weekend against Italy, you know, the noise from the crowd is phenomenal, and they're all like singing Loch Lomond before the start, and towards the end when we're starting to edge it out, you know, they're all chanting Scotland, and they're both quite, they're stadiums where you can really feel the crowd close to you, and I think for both teams that just hugely energizes us. So that's really special for me to feel the support of our supporters behind us, definitely.
So at the start of the season, Corinne, did you sit down, obviously, with the coaches, the squad sat down? You would have put some aims and some desires in place. How well have Scotland done this season? I mean, from a personal point of view, I think of the teams that we've seen England play so far, which obviously is Italy, Ireland, yourselves and Wales, I think Scotland and Ireland, as perhaps two of the lesser fancied teams against England, have actually put up the better performances than other teams. And I mean, if you looked at the score sheet, England, Scotland and the Calcutta Cup match, you would say it was a bit of maybe a humbling as such, but it was far from that. I mean, Scotland really did compete. So where are you on that scheme of things? And, you know, is it just vitally important now you get that win against what was a very tough Ireland side against who came out against England, which me and Joe will discuss further at the end of this discussion?
Yeah, it is a big weekend coming up for us. And I think Obviously, the game last weekend was massive for us. I think it was on the back of 12 losses. I think probably coming out of the World Cup as a team, we really knew that we hadn't given the best performances that we knew we were capable of. I think coming close against Wales, coming close against Australia, probably stung us a lot as a team, and it's been probably a tough year or so. So to finally feel like we're finally getting somewhere, and those results are showing, is a really great feeling. And you know, it was a tough loss against France, you know, a week and a bit ago, and we had a 6-day turnaround with travel, etc. There's some quite sore bodies, but I think the belief that we've been building as a team is really showing on the pitch, and that's fantastic.
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, the question I was going to ask there is, you know, I alluded to the score that England's put on yourselves, but do you feel, because I mean, obviously the big buzz topic around the TikTok Six Nations women games is mismatches, is, you know, are England so far ahead of everybody else that it's no point even having the competition almost in some quarters, which I think is very short-sighted, look at things and everything. But, you know, are you perceiving that gap closing? Can England get better, or have they reached a plateau where everybody else needs to aim for now? And do you see, not only from Scotland, but the other guys and the other teams out there, do you see that gap shortening a lot?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think definitely that gap is closing 100%. I mean, yes, the scoreline is still wide, but you only have to look at the things like the forward set piece. You know, a couple of years ago, five or so, you know, Scotland really would have struggled to retain ball in any of those set pieces. The English forwards were so dominant. And I think that's something that is hugely improved, whether that's just, you know, time on task that the forwards are now getting, and, you know, we've got dedicated coaches for that and all those things. I think that is a really competitive area now. Yes, England are still, you know, head and shoulders above, but, you know, we saw in the Ireland game, there's big chunks of those games where actually they're going scoreless, or teams are getting one back against them. So I think you're right in saying it is short-sighted to say, well, you know, the Six Nations isn't competitive, or it won't be. I think teams are getting closer every year on year.
Well, absolutely. And I think the thing for Scotland in particular, and in those games, looking at those home nations games, is that you got an opportunity and you scored from an opportunity. And, you know, the more times, and perhaps that's been certainly in that game against Wales in the World Cup, the one thing that Scotland took a lot of criticism for was not taking the opportunities that presented them to the team. And now you look at it, you've obviously highlighted that, or the coaches have highlighted that as an area of improvement, and you can see that improvement. And again, you know, five tries on the weekend, was it against Italy? That's fantastic to see.
Yeah, brilliant. The forwards put in a huge shift against Italy. I think they scored all five of our tries. And as you said, Lou got her first try for Scotland, which was awesome to see. But even, you know, we use the word clinical, and I think that's probably one major difference with the top teams at the moment, is the percentage that they finish off. You know, we talk about the England game. There was within the first 10-15 minutes, you know, we were up in there 22, and I think Emma Orr came within, you know, inches of the line. So we are creating those opportunities, and definitely one of the things we'll be looking at is how we increase that percentage of the ones that we managed to finish off.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we expect to see you have a great game again on the weekend against Ireland, and hopefully a couple of tries at least for you. But shall we move on to shall we move on to Saracens and just sort of like say, ask about the season so far? Because it's been a bit of a weird season for Saracens. And I know when we've spoken to the likes of Louise and Lottie and all the various people that we've had on, it has been a bit of a disrupted season with the World Cup bang in the middle of it all, and then players coming back and not coming back into the team, and then injuries and whatever. I mean, we're coming to the business end of the season, which we know Saracens men, Saracens women do better than just about everybody else. How happy is the club with the season? How has it gone? And two, how ready are we for the big bucks games, as it were? You know, the old, is it like with the golfing terminology, you drive for show and you putt for dough, and we're in that putting season now, aren't we?
Yeah, it's really getting to the crunch time now, which is always the exciting bit. I think you're right. It has been a little bit of a strange season, a bit disrupted, you know, a bit delayed towards the start with players coming back at different times from the World Cup, and probably especially for us, not, you know, the start to the season that we maybe wanted or that we're used to, which I think actually has probably presented us with some different challenges that we're used to and has tested our resolve as a team, which maybe we'll look back on and say, actually, you know, that could have been the best thing that happened for us. And I think hopefully that will show going into this back end of the season. We've got four exciting games to finish off, and, you know, we finished the last block really strongly. So hopefully we'll be able to just pick up from there. Obviously the cup run is going really well. We've clinched that finals place right at the end of the game, which was very exciting. So yeah, I think, you know, we go back in all cylinders firing. Yeah, it's exciting.
Well, it's an interesting point you make there with that game on the weekends, and it being a last-minute penalty missed by Gloucester, where particularly where Simon Middleton's been coming out and throwing his two penny in about women, you know, what changes should be made to kicking and everything, which I think is slightly disrespectful, really. I think, you know, at the end of the day, even the best kickers in the world, we've seen Owen Farrell this year not have his best time off the tee, although he was pretty dead-eye dick on the weekend. But, you know, missing kicks like that, I mean, that was... I mean, you were down there, Joe. Tell us about it.
I wouldn't say it was a... It was a great game. It was very competitive. And the girls really, really pulled out the stocks in the end. But... I was stood with a few of the others from the SSA Supporters Association, and I said this is going to come down to a kick at the end. It was that much of a battle. There was clashes of heads and all sorts, but the girls really put a shift in defensively, and then Lottie's try, final try at the end was an absolute classic, typical Lottie, nice little spin out there, and I think a few of the players then came and took her out in the celebrations. But the last penalty, it really could have gone either way, and actually Emma Singh had been kicking well for England, she'd been kicking well for Gloucester all season, and it didn't miss by much, I'll be perfectly honest. There was a moment, and I was stood directly in line with it and watching it, and it just, whether a gust of wind caught it or whether it just pinged in the last bit, but caught the outside of the post and whistled past. But good for Saracens. But we've got probably an interesting trip down to Sandy Park on Sunday now, which I'm sure the girls will be up for. Being live streamed as well now through Premier 15s for those that can't get down to Sandy Park. And it'll be good and competitive there, but clearly, you know, the investment's gone in the cup this season. Opportunity for a few players who haven't been playing in international games to get out there and show their capabilities and scoring some tries as well. So yeah, it was a good day out.
I was just going to say, I've watched Lottie's try a few times as well. It's a good one.
I suppose that's the question. I mean, you know, I mean, how do you one fit everybody in? Because I mean, there's a lot of good backs and back three players at Saracens. You know, you're away on international duty. Jess Bruges is away on national duty. Other guys come in. Whatever. Is there friendly rivalry, or is it a, you know, is it a case of when you get your winger shirt on or whatever, that I'm going to go out and score three tries because she scored two tries last week and she's going to score four tries next week or whatever. You know, how does it actually work that way? Or is it just a case of, you know, we're all in this together. Whoever gets that shirt deserves it, and we'll go from there.
I think it's definitely more friendly than competitive, I would say. You know, I think we strike a really good balance in training of driving each other on to be better. But I think as a general rule in Saracens, we don't have any selfish players really in there. Inside of me, you know, they're all really good ball distributors. And, you know, quite often I have Jess inside of me and she's got back gas to beat anybody. But the amount of times that she puts me in space with the ball, I couldn't count them, you know, on my hands this season. So I think definitely we're on the more giving side. And I don't think there's any rivalries about how many tries we've scored. I think we're all happy to see each other again over the whitewash, which is lovely.
So there's no sort of like steak dinners or anything being offered up like other players have talked about on the Fezcast, you know, that, you know, at the end of the day, when you've been top try scorer, everybody's got to take you out on the lash of at the end of the season. Well, or?
I haven't heard of any yet, but maybe I'll put that question to Mel. But if you get player of the month, then you do get to choose the dinner for the supper that we have as a team. So that is one bonus.
Before we finish, we'd like to ask you a little bit about life outside of rugby, because, you know, as much as you now obviously got those contracts and you can put some more time into it, we understand that you're a keen environmentalist, and not only a keen environmentalist, but pretty well-educated environmentalist, which is beyond where I go, with master's degrees in Cambridge and God knows what else. And, you know, I mean, how important is that side of your life to keeping you, I suppose, grounded and a level of normality, perhaps?
Yeah, it's a good question, and one I've talked about a bit before. And I think for me, it is important to have something outside of rugby. Keeps my brain working in a different way. And I think as well, you know, any performance environment can become quite stressful. You've got a lot to think about and focus on. And for me, it's something that I can take my brain away from that. I can focus on something else entirely. And the environment and nature is something that I'm passionate about outside of rugby. I've always loved the outdoors. So for me, it balances out really well. It helps me switch off and just put some mental energy into something else. Yeah, so I kind of write for around 2 days a week at the moment. And yeah, that hybrid life of rugby player and journalist is working really well for me at the moment. I love it.
Is that something that's encouraged by the club? I mean, not only yourself, but other players, are they encouraged to find these outlets to not always be focused on the rugby? Is it something that Saracens are happy to see you do?
Yeah, I think mental health and well-being is definitely something that's being talked about a lot more in the sports space, which is brilliant. And I don't know if the club encourages it so much as they definitely make provisions for it. You know, if you look at our team of Saracens women, we have a whole spectrum of players from, you know, fully professional with England, you know, rugby day in, day out, right the way through to people who work full time, and rugby is, you know, when they can fit it in. So I think the fact that, you know, we have day training sessions, we have options for when we can gym. I like to do some speed sessions, but the normal time that we do them, I usually work in. So Tyler, our S&C, helps me fit those around in a different time. And just those little things can really make a difference to kind of help balance our schedules. So they definitely do help with that on a variety of levels.
And I read something else about you that I'm interested in knowing. So you went and lived in America for a little bit. Is that right? Mm. I heard that you dabbled in a little bit of American football. Is that true? And how did you find that? I know it's probably a few years ago.
Yes, American football. Yes, that one's slipped out somehow. Yeah, I think I probably found more differences than similarities. But it was when I was probably, well, I would have been 13 or 14. So we lived out there for 3 years in Pasadena, California, went out with my mum's job. And Americans do like sport in school slightly differently to at least my experience in Scotland, in that they do them kind of like four in a year and they'll do them all by season. So I think the season we were in was maybe volleyball or something for the girls' sport, and that wasn't really my thing. I definitely didn't have the height for it. And one of my good guy friends knew that I had been playing rugby in Scotland before I came over. There wasn't any women's rugby teams there when I was there. And he said one day, he was like, well, why don't you come along to football practice? You know, you could probably tackle the guys there, no problem. So that was how it came about. And because there was no women's American football, by default, they had to allow girls to play on the boys' team. And yeah, the guys were really great. I think they found it all quite amusing, and they just took me under their wing. And it was great fun for a season. I think probably the novelty, maybe more than anything. I wasn't a fan of having all the kit. You know, you have these huge shoulder pads and a helmet, which I actually found quite almost claustrophobic going into contact. And as a sport, it's quite stop-start. It's quite prescriptive in terms of the quarterback calling the plays and things. So from that perspective, I was definitely, you know, always rugby was superior in my mind, but it was fun for a season.
Well, I'm glad we didn't lose you to American football, that's for sure.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Do you still follow the NFL now, though, Corinne? Or
I can't say I do, to be honest. You know, I'll watch it if it's on for kind of a social watch. But I never really got into the kind of following the various teams. It was more, you know, maybe fun for the Super Bowl, but that was the extent of it, really.
A few years back, my wife and I went out and saw friends living in Carolina, North Carolina, in Winston-Salem on Super Bowl weekend when the Eagles beat the Patriots, Tom Brady offer. It was quite amazing. I mean, it was wall to wall, wasn't it? I mean, if we ever get that passion in rugby over here, that, you know, the week before the final is everybody's turning, what are you going to have eating and the adverts and God knows what else? It will be quite amazing, won't it? But yeah. Corinne, yeah. Thank you ever so much for joining us. I think it's been a fascinating chat, and we really look forward to seeing you scoring more and more tries. The Flying Scotswoman, I might just have to trademark that one if there's, you know, when they make the T-shirts of you with the Flying Scotswoman on it, I'll take 10% or whatever. But yeah, no, it's been absolutely great. And as I say, best of luck for the weekend. We'll all be cheering you on, Scotland, and you know, obviously giving Grace a little bit of support as well from our side of you. So I mean, that's the next one for you, Joe. We need to get Grace on, because obviously we've had English, Welsh and Scottish Saracens on, so Grace would be our next port of call on that one. But yeah, Corinne, thank you very much. Have a great game this weekend, and we look forward to seeing you back at Stonex in the black shirts soon, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks very much, guys. It was a pleasure to chat.
Thanks, Corinne.
Cheers.
Hi, Alex Osterbury here, Director of Rugby for Saracens Women. You're listening to the Saracens Fezcast.
This is the Fezcast.
Well, that was a wonderful chat there with Corinne Grant, the Flying Scotswoman. And yeah, absolutely fantastic, Joseph. You know, the one thing I do always get from the women at Saracens is they're so bright, so intelligent, brilliant to speak to, and just really lovely, nice, rounded people, aren't they?
Oh, they just, you know, you can see how appreciative they are that people take the time, and they reciprocate that. You see them at the end of the games, and they're out there for 45 minutes an hour, and bless poor Mel, the team manager, trying to round them up and get them back in for Tiki Tonga or, you know, the old random drug tests and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they give what they give back what they want to receive from the fans. And, you know, the fans appreciate it. You only have to go down to the Stonex on one of the women's games and the number of young families and kids sitting there waiting to get autographs from, you know, their idols and stuff. And, and you know, they will all make the effort, come over and sign that. And, you know, I never say a bad word about any of them because they're such good value. And that's kind of emanated in the national game as well. And it doesn't matter what team, you know, you go see playing. I went down and watched the Wales play England game. I'm at Twickenham this weekend to watch Le Crunch, which I know we'll chat about in a bit. But, you know, it's just fantastic. And we talked to Corinne there about the noise at the Dam House. And again, you know, the support that the Irish fans had for over at Musgrave Park as well. You know, there's such an uprising with the women and people wanting to support the women's teams. You can just see it now, the growth of the game, and it's so nice to see. And I think, you know, all of the players appreciate it. That's why they're giving back to the people that come out and see them, you know, day in, day out. But it's really nice that, you know, the girls want to come in and have a chat with us lowly people on this Fezcast, and we're grateful for their insights because it's always nice to speak to them all.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the important thing is when you look at the support there and everything, it's now not a case of seeing these as women playing rugby or men playing rugby. They are rugby players.
Absolutely.
And that is quite simply, there's no definition along gender or whatever. They are just rugby players and they're exceptionally good at what they do, not only on the pitch but off the pitch, because that is as important as anything else. And yeah, all credit to people like Corinne who are growing the game through their not only their playing ability but what they are prepared to put in, and all credit to them. But we do need to have a quick discussion about the TikTok Six Nations, what happened on the weekend, and what we've got to look forward to. And we touched a lot on the Scotland-Italy game. But just to say, brilliant for Scotland, you know. Again, it's another one, is it? You know, if you were to ask me Scotland versus Italy in the men's game, I'd want it to win every time. And the same if Italy play Wales, you know, when Italy beat Wales in the Millennium Stadium a couple of years ago, I was cock-a-hoop. It's different with the women because I want to see, you know, I want to see these guys growing, the sport grow. The possibility of there being a British Lions would be pointless if all it is England and Saracens B team. You know, that would be a pointless waste of time. It's got to be, you know, you've got to have players from all sides on being part of that if that's to go ahead. But yeah, great for Scotland. 5 tries, as they say, forward power, got the game plan right and took their opportunities.
It's just fantastic. And I have to say, I've spoken to Rachel Malcolm after Saracens have played Loughborough Lightning before, and she's probably one of the nicest people I've ever met. And I've watched her interviews over the last 12 months where Scotland have just been pipped or put in a really solid performance and the results just haven't gone their way. And you can see the emotion on her face, and it was just really, really nice. And I don't think there's probably anybody probably in the world that would begrudge Rachel Malcolm having tears of happiness and joy after that win at the weekend, because you can see how much effort and investment. It's not through lack of trying for those Scottish girls. Great to see Jade Conkle-Roberts back, who undoubtedly helps shore up their pack. But they have got such a brilliant, brilliant pack. And, you know, yeah, it's really, really nice to see them come out on top of what was actually a really strong Italy team. You know, we shouldn't be saying that they've got past a team that aren't significant. You know, Italy, I think, are ranked sixth or seventh in the world. And the win against Italy put Scotland up into the top 10 for the first time in a little while. So, you know, really, really important win for them. And I think hopefully that will be the catalyst for them to drive forward going into the last game in the Six Nations. But also you've got the forthcoming autumn competition around the WX5, the tiered competition that's going to include the Pacific Four and other teams for around the world. And, you know, playing, getting those test matches for the women, I think is really important now. There was a time where, you know, the Women's Six Nations and a few test matches and a World Cup was all they would get. And now we're seeing, you know, autumn internationals for the women's teams, friendlies, builds up to the World Cup, which will be hosted by in England in 2025. You know, the game is escalating. And I know we'll talk about England, France in a bit, but the fact that they sold 50,000 tickets at Twickenham is just, it's incredible. And, you know, by 2025, the hope is that is a sellout for the World Cup final, and I've no doubt at this stage that people will be clambering and desperate to get those tickets, me being one of them.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, indeed. I suppose before we do need to have there's a couple of negative things. There's always going to be a couple of negative things. Wales lose again to the teams that they are aiming at. I mean, Wales, you know, are the third best team in the competition. I just don't think they perhaps progressed far enough in comparison to particularly Scotland and Italy, with a couple of results against England and France that perhaps aren't as good. Now, last week I mentioned after the England game that I felt, you know, the talent's there in the Wales team. You can see they're more professional. You can see they're fitter. Is the question we now got to ask of Wales, or Wales, you know, and we know the turmoil in the game in Wales at all levels. But is there a question about the coaching? Is the coaching the right setup to take them forward now they have got the professional contracts? Or has the coaching just been found out this season to be a little bit limited? What do you think, Joe?
I don't know. I don't think Ewan Cunningham's done a bad job, to be fair. And, you know, they've got a few up-and-coming stars. Salisa Tuipulotu is something else. As a 19-year-old who's come from the back row and her first season playing prop is, I mean, she's just phenomenal. And until you see her actually playing in the flesh, it's great seeing her on the TV. But she, if she continues on the trajectory that she's travelling at the minute, she is going to be an outstanding player. And I think, you know, they've got that skill, they've got that those capabilities. I think, you know, they've had professional contracts for about 18 months now. I think probably if you look in the same time frame for England, you'd probably argue that they're probably not far behind England if you mirrored the trajectories in terms of professionalising the game. And I think you'd probably give them another 12 months. And I think, you know, you've got a lot of those players for the Welsh team playing in the Prem 15s now. You know, they're there and thereabouts. They probably just need that time to completely gel. And I don't think they're far away. You only had to watch the second half against France for me. And their grit and determination, the Welsh team, I was suitably impressed, because if you took the first 10 minutes of scoring out of that game, I think it was 22-14 to France, which isn't far off. And the scoreline probably didn't justify how much effort Wales put in, particularly in that second half. And they rattled the French cages, I think, a little bit. And again, we talked about it in terms of Scotland not being clinical and crossing that whitewash. There was a couple of times where Wales probably didn't do that, gave away a penalty, and France were able to exit. So I don't think they're too far away. I think they just need a little bit more time. And I would like to think that in 12 months' time, when we're talking about this Women's Six Nations, I can sit here with full confidence and say, I told you so, Jez. I would like to say that they're getting there. But I don't agree necessarily with some of the stuff that's come out about there being such a huge gap, because I think this gap is definitely closing. And it's a matter of time before we're getting some genuinely competitive probably surprising results in competitions like the Women's Six Nations where England get upset. We don't know. We'll see.
Absolutely. I mean, I will say, obviously, the game for Wales against Italy this weekend is huge. I think, you know, Wales, for their progress, really do need to get a win under their belt on that one. Otherwise, it will, you know, it's a results-driven game, like all the games are. And I think three losses would not be acceptable to Wales. But, you know, let's see what happens there. Well, again, now, you know, you talk about the closing of gaps and everything. England-Ireland, I personally predicted a cricket score. I thought it was going to be 100 zip. And last week I said that, you know, regardless of what happens, that England needs to go into the game full tilt. And if it is 100-0, that they pay Ireland the full respect of doing so. And actually, this weekend, you know, I'm going to be critical here. I don't think England played Ireland the due respect they should do. Number one, Simon Middleton made far too many changes. You got, you know, a big bugbear of mine. I mentioned it last week. Sam challenged me on it, and, you know, he was quite right what he did. But Hannah Bottomman, she's had 20 minutes back, and then she's starting the game, and she gets injured. And I think there's an element that you really do need to prove your fitness in the intensity of Test rugby. It's no good turning around and saying, yeah, they've been on the training paddock. You know, they're ready if they haven't had a proper competitive game. And I think that's number one, you know, and there's every chance that Hannah's got an injury that's going to keep her out for an appreciable amount of time. That should never have happened. I think that's number one. Number two, it's bringing back players who haven't even been around the squad really. And, you know, Mohan, as great a player as she is, and she is a great player, she didn't have her best game. And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that, you know, she's not been there or thereabouts. And you got Packer there. What's happened to Leanne Infante? How, you know, Eloise has been. And suddenly you bring in, it just did not make sense to me. And I think that did backfire quite a lot. And I also think the third problem was they were sent out onto that field with the full expectation that they were going to run in the cricket score. And they tried too hard to run in the cricket score, and that played into Ireland's hands. Now, Ireland were never going to win that game. We know that. But the score flattered England at the end of the day, I think. And Ireland deserved a lot more. And I think there was a couple of really, really good performances. Grace had a great game on the open side. The number eight for Ireland is superb. I mean, she's like a little jack in the box. I think the scrum half had a good game. The reserve scrum half who came on had a good game. And really, I don't know what happened there, really, Joe. I mean, what's your thoughts?
Again, you know, I agree with a lot of your points there, mate. I'm all for giving people opportunities and resting players if Simon Middleton feels like some of them need a rest, you know, bearing in mind that we have got what is and probably always was going to be the title decider this forthcoming weekend. That said, I also think that, you know, people need to have some consistency because he wouldn't have dared dream doing that in a World Cup competition, regardless of who the team they were playing against. Because it becomes about consistency and playing people regularly. Those, you know, the team gels, and, you know, Corinne mentioned it there before about the players that she's surrounded by and having those good relationships with those players who fear to go and run down the wing at high speed. You know, you don't get that just from being on the training park together. And, you know, as you say, if people are coming in from seemingly nowhere, they may well have been in training camp. I don't think it necessarily sends always the right message. And, you know, the same can be said for those people that have played one game and then been ceremoniously put to one side. You know, May Campbell being one of them, you know.
Well, not even one game, 10 minutes.
Exactly. And you know, I know that she had a yellow card, and that was an unfortunate circumstance. But if you look at what she was doing on the park, I mean, is 10 minutes ever enough to give somebody the opportunity to demonstrate what they're about? And May had an absolute blinder this weekend against Gloucester, as she always does. Throwed herself around the park, scored a try, smiled when she hit the ground, and clearly is loving her rugby. I just think that, you know, I don't think it was the right decision. I'm not a coach, and I'm certainly not a standard England coach, and there'll be reasons behind his decisions. I'm just, I do question whether it was disrespectful to an Ireland team who, you're right, have got some brilliant players, some up and coming players. Nicola Bard, their number eight, is excellent. Niamh Jones is one of those front row players as hooker who I think she made something ridiculous like 45 tackles and she didn't miss none against England. She's just everywhere on the park. And you can't disrespect that level of play. You know, a lot of these players again playing in the Women's Six Nations. They're missing a lot of their players that have chosen to play on the seven circuit for GB. So they haven't got the same level of speed on the wing that they've had previously, you know, but that's individual choices. I just think England, perhaps they had an opportunity to test out some players that they genuinely think will perform this next week against France, and getting that chemistry between them to make sure actually the set plays were all good, you know. Around the park, they were switching around the ball. It was an opportunity for them to really demonstrate some flair around their passing and using the backs, using the forwards. And I think they haven't done that because they've made too many changes. And I don't know whether that will unsettle them in terms of the game for this weekend, because I suggest personally that I think it'll be a very different looking team for this weekend against France. And that could backfire horribly, because France are a good squad and they've got a good team. And I think although they were playing Wales, I think they only rested maybe one of their players, and that was the scrum half, Pauline Bourdon. I don't think they rested too many other players, France, and they were probably using that game against a tough and determined Welsh team to test some of those relationships that they will want to work against England.
Well, absolutely. I think, you know, as much as we say that England disrespected Ireland, I think actually there's an element that they've disrespected France in so much as that, you know, you're right with the World Cup. We went through the last World Cup out in New Zealand, and I don't think he changed the side once. There might have been the odd player come in because there was an injury, but essentially he picked the same 23 the whole way through for all those games. So why suddenly has he gone away from something that was pretty successful for him? And let's be honest about it, we probably deserve to win the final as well if it wasn't for, you know, the sending off and everything like that, and a questionable refereeing decision that still grates a little bit. But you know, why has he gone against, do you think? And there's also another element that I feel as well, is that he's almost like a dead man walking, isn't it, that he said he's going. You know, I think that should have been left until after this. Whether it's because he wants the fanfare, I don't know. It could really tarnish his reputation if France come out, and they will come out because it's France, England. It doesn't matter. You say it's Le Crunch, and it matters. And, you know, we've now lost our talismanic captain to injury, I presume. I can't see Marley being available. Or if she is, then, I mean, she's going to be playing on one leg. And, you know, so many players who've come off the boil, maybe even, you don't know. I just think they should have put out a full strength side, the side that's done so good. Maybe a couple of changes, maybe try somebody here, somebody there, but not bringing players from outside the squad who haven't even been involved. That just smacked to me of keeping players who otherwise might turn around and say, do you know what, if I'm not part of the squad, I'm retiring or whatever. Keeping them happy, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it just seems incomprehensible to me.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I just I get the opportunities, giving people the opportunities, newer players, and, you know, and to be fair to Simon Middleton, in terms of the original training camp squad that he formulated, there was some really, you know, he's picked squads there based on performances, how they've been playing in the Premier 15s. And I don't think he's then followed that through with picking them for match day squads all the time. Particularly this last weekend. And as a result, I mean, and I get it again, is, you know, next weekend, this forthcoming weekend is a really important game, and you're trying to avoid people being injured, but we've managed to get some people injured anyway. Now, my only hope is that both Botts and Marley were withdrawn, in order to make sure that they didn't get any further knocks. And actually, the knocks aren't as serious as we first thought. But, you know, Marley was in a boot and on crutches. But as Simon Middleton said, everyone goes in a boot. Doesn't matter whether they've broken a finger or not, they still go in a boot. I think that was his quote. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with the squad announcements this week. Clearly, it'll be a big miss if Marley isn't available. Whether Poppy is back, who knows? We shall again have to wait and see. But yeah, I think there's times to blood players and there's times to give people opportunities. I'm just not sure that his timing is that great when he's exiting, because as you say, from the outside looking in to some of us, it might just look that like he's not perhaps doing the best job he could as England coach.
Absolutely not. Well, look, we'll wait and see, won't we? It's going to be an interesting weekend this weekend. I'm looking forward to Super Saturday, an afternoon in front of the telly. I'm going to be carb loading and tapering, so I'm not going to be on a big run or anything. So that's all to look forward to there. But Joe, thank you very much. We'll have a word from one of our sponsors, and then me and Matt will be back talking about other things in the game of rugby.
Hi guys, I'm Alex Linton and I'm a proud Looseheads ambassador.
I'm Sydney Gregson and I'm a Looseheads ambassador.
We're a rugby mental health charity working to tackle the stigma. You can find us at Looseheads on all social media channels or at looseheads.co.uk.
The Looseheads mission is to place a mental health lead at every rugby club. Get in touch now to find out more. Take care and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Enjoy the rest of the pod.
Fezcast. Well, yeah, absolutely fabulous stuff there with Corinne Grant. And yeah, enjoyed, giving Simon Middleton a little bit of the rounds of the kitchen sink after the Six Nations weekend. But yeah, all good stuff discussed there with Joe and obviously Corinne. And we thank Corinne for giving up her time, which in a obviously busy life, to have a chat with us. But time for us, Matt, to have a discussion about the wider world of rugby. And first of all, one of my big bugbears, and it seems to have split the rugby world quite asunder in two almost. Those who think Jack Noel was hard done by, and those of us who quite correctly think that he got away with it quite lightly, actually. I have a problem with, and this kind of, I'm going to drag this back to Saracens, okay? Saracens are perceived as this club of with arrogance and whatever. We're the club that everybody likes to hate. And we understand why that is. And we're not going to go over that and drag up old coals or whatever. But when it comes down to it, you never, ever see Saracens players on Twitter. Maybe Billy Vunipola has let himself down in the past slightly. He'd be the only one. But you don't see, even Billy Vunipola, you don't see him criticising on rugby matters. You know, his religious and ethical feelings is something completely different. And that's his own personal thing. And I haven't got a problem with him actually voicing that because, you know, in the same way as I voice it. It doesn't impinge on what my employer thinks. It's not my employer's views. It's just me personally. That's Billy. Yeah, and you challenge what he thinks, and I disagree with him pretty much on all of that. But you don't see Saracens players coming out and doing what Jack Nowell did. And basically, if Jack Nowell had said what he'd said on the field, he would have either been walked back 10 yards or potentially got a yellow card or maybe even a red card. He disrespected the referee. I personally think, as I said on the previous first cast, Carl Dixon got it absolutely right, the decisions. But even if he made a complete horlicks of it, he's the man with the whistle. He made the decision. You respect that. And Jack Nowell, when I was a kid, my dad gave me a sign to put above my desk when I was doing my homework. It said, before you put your mouth into motion, put your brain into gear. And I think half the time, Jack Nowell and a few of his friends at that club down there, their brains are in neutral quite a lot of the time.
Yeah. I wish we weren't talking about Exeter so much this season, but they're just setting themselves up for it, aren't they? I mean, my opinion on this, I know it has split people in two. I'm still really undecided about it, and it seems like once again I'm trying to find a bit of nuance in the middle, which is I probably make too much of a habit of. But I look at some people have sort of turned around and said to me, well, it's the one thing that football's doing that rugby isn't, is that they've stopped this players criticising referees. Anyone that does that on Twitter in an interview, they get a ban in football, and it's pretty blanket and clear cut, and they come out and go, well, football's ahead of rugby in that respect. Now, I get it, but also to me, it kind of sterilises the whole thing. There's not a lot of personality in football for me, and that's partly why, is that you're not allowed to say anything. I would say that what Jack Nowell did, he's done in completely the wrong way. I would not have had any issue with a tweet or an interview or something that was constructive. If there was if that's the law, then I don't like the laws. Here's what we should do. People can agree or disagree with that, but actually it's something that's constructive debate, and it's, you know, the powers that be in rugby shouldn't be short-sighted about it and should see that as actually something that's engaging people. Whereas Noel's reaction there was just toys out the pram, stroppy. And it does look a bit crap. The thing I have an issue with is that he was the only one that actually got a ban for it, whereas there are plenty of other people in rugby saying very similar things, and they've not been touched at all.
I have to agree with you there entirely, Matt. That's the only bit of sympathy I have with Jack Nowell, is that a number of his teammates, Henry Slade, Luke Cowan-Dickin, is not young kids. These are established England internationals who should understand their responsibilities. They've come out and done exactly the same. And we've seen past tweets from the likes of, in particular, public enemy number one, Joe Marler, who is a man who can't put a brain into gear because I don't think he's got one half the time. That may be being a bit cruel on the lad. But, you know, Jack Nowell is the one that they've decided that they're going to make an example of in the hope of stamping it out. And that's slightly unfair on Jack Nowell, because they could have and should have done it a lot earlier. They should have made it clear. And you can do it. I mean, you've got players like Chris Ashton and Danny Kerr, who are still playing the game, who could go on to podcasts and such like and have intelligent, which I know is difficult to say when it's Danny Kerr, but they do. They present it in the right way. That Danny Kerr would sit there and say something along the lines of, I don't agree with that decision, and this is why I don't agree with that decision. But, you know, the referee's made that decision in that, and you deal with that as it stands. And you're right, you take the conversation in a different way. I just feel, I mean, the problem is, I think a lot of it comes from Exeter, from their director of rugby, because Rob Baxter, or Gob Baxter, as he's got to be known around our way, he has an opinion on absolutely everything. And his opinion is nothing, I never think his opinion is anything to do with the betterment of rugby, but it's all to do with the betterment of his side. You know, there's no coincidence that his big bugbear at the moment is relegation. Because when you look at Chiefs, they're favourites to be bottom of the league next year. So he's going to chop see about that. If Chiefs were still at the top and it was Saracens at the bottom, you could bet your bottom dollar he wouldn't give two hoots about relegation at that point in time. And that's the issue I have with that. And then you look at the club, I mean, the players that are going out the door there, there's obviously something wrong there. And then, you know, rumours about what certain players have done when they go into different clubs. And we can't mention it because I'm sure somebody's legal side of it would do. But, you know, if the rumours are true, then, you know, there is something seriously wrong down there, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like it. But I don't know, from my point of view, I just go, well, if they want to tear themselves apart from the inside out, then let's just let them get on with it.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, let's move on from that one. We said our piece, and I mean, I think we could go on forever and ever and ever about it, and I'm sure it'll happen again in the future some point along the line. But some good news. I mean, first, well, I say good news, it's not good news for Ealing, but good news for the Championship, that Jersey beat Ealing on the weekend, and it looks like Jersey are going to win the Championship, which is fantastic, especially given that everybody's been, you know, pumping Ealing Triathlon saying they should come up. Would that Jersey come up? Come on, that'd be a great away day, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. Unfortunately, Jersey don't want to come up, so it's end of story, really. But yeah, it should have been more of a highlight fixture, to be honest. Jersey against Ealing, I try to highlight it in our socials, and actually now the team that would stop Jersey from winning the title now is our friends down at Amptill next week. And yeah, there's some stories there. And whatever they do with promotion, relegation, it does show that the Championship can be competitive and can be a good league to keep an eye on. And what we're obviously going to come on to now is how we might be able to do that a little bit next season.
Well, absolutely. You know, and I mean, we've been very critical of the RFU and PRL and all various different other people that run the game. But it does seem as perhaps somebody's had a moment of clarity and come up with the great idea of including Championship clubs in what is now the Premiership Cup. And fantastic that, you know, we're going to get the opportunity, it seems, because of the way that the competition is going to be structured, that we're going to have some games where big teams are going to go to the likes of Coventry and Nottingham and Ealing and Doncaster and whatever. And, you know, it's going to be closer to what the old Tetley Cup used to be like.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it should be quite good. So, yeah, four pools of six, I think it's going to be. So, very roughly, it'll be three teams from the Premiership and three teams from the Championship and five games in a pool played during the World Cup. So, you're not going to get, assuming, you know, England and Ireland and Wales or whatever, they actually go a little bit deeper than the pool stages in some cases. But we're not going to see Premiership teams putting out their high-flying internationals, but it will be an extension of pre-season, so it will be taken semi-seriously by the Premiership teams. So, yeah, Championship clubs are going to be able to host some big games, and I hope that, given that it's 16 pools, so everyone's playing five games, it's going to be an uneven split between home games and away games, and you'd hope that it's the Championship sides that get to host three and play away for two, and they're the ones that reap the sort of a little bit of extra financial reward for that.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think it's a fantastic idea. And as I say, you know, with critical and throw criticism where it's deserved, well, I think we need to throw praise where it's deserved. And this is certainly it. And I'm certainly looking forward to seeing who we pull in those pool stages going forward and looking forward to some really good away days at clubs where we've made some very good friends in our season in the Championship.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's a few people sort of having a bit of a guess at how it's all going to run, and if it's sort of picked as a you know, little snake of filling the pools, where if with us winning the Premiership or finishing top of the Premiership, we'd end up with the side getting promoted from National League One in our pool and things like that. There's a couple of people suggesting that we could very easily end up with Cornish Pirates in our pool, which is a hell of an away day. We look forward to that, and I've got a couple of mates in Cambridge, so if they come up from League One, I'll be trying to make that trip as well. So there's lots to look forward to, whoever we get in that. Chances are we'll end up with Wasps, won't we?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other big one, isn't it? The fact that Wasps, seemingly forgetting that they owe millions of pounds here, there and everywhere, are going to build a 24,000-seater stadium. Yeah, I mean, that is, if that happens, that is when we'll really start throwing the criticism, quite rightly, at an awful lot of people, because that is SH1T of the highest order.
Yeah.
Enough said, Matt. Enough said. Look, I think we've rambled on enough this week. Just really to say thank you, everybody, for listening in. Hopefully we've got some news about some more interviews. I'm not mentioning names because that always comes back and bites me on the arse in a big way. But yeah, we'll be back next week. First week of May it'll be. So it'll be the 3rd of May we're back. And normally that's when the season ends. But I think we've got about another 3 months still to go, haven't we now? But
I think so, yeah. We don't get a pre-season really, do we? We've just got to keep going.
Absolutely, keep going, we do. But yeah, thank you everybody for listening in. Thank you to Corey and Grant for joining us with me and Joe to chat. A fantastic chat, and I hope you enjoyed that as well. And thank you, Matt, for your time discussing Sunday and the wider world of rugby.
Pleasure as ever.
Cheers, mate.
This is the Fezcast.